This is audio book of title. Grace, the World of Randpa. By Sheila Rouse. Book can be free downloaded via lulu.com. I met Lobsang Randpa in London in 1954. That was before he wrote his book A.O. the Third Eye, and before he became known the world over. At the time, I was living in central London with my husband and our two small children in a pleasant Regency house just off Bayswater Road, opposite the last entrance to Kensington Gardens, going on from Hyde Park Corner towards Notting Hill Gate. Lobsang Randpa was known as Dr. Carl Q. Atman then, and he later told me that his first glimpse of me was when I almost ran over him in Kensington Church Street. I have no recollection of that incident, which is probably why he almost lost his life that day. I simply did not see him. In those days it was entirely possible to drive around London quite fast, and that was how I was accustomed to drive my little car. There was a garden at the back of our house, and at the end of the garden we had the usual garage, accessible from the mews running at the back of the houses. We had built a flat above our garage to accommodate a general help. Nowadays such help would be referred to as a housekeeper, but at that time the word a housekeeper was generally reserved for a woman who ran a household, perhaps that of a wealthy bachelor, or alternatively it would refer to a very able woman who presided over a large household on a par with the butler. We were not that grand. We had a general help, and it was in the flat of our general help, above the garage, that I first met Drive Carl Q. Atman. It was a meeting I have not forgotten, and never shall. Following that initial meeting I became acquainted with him gradually over the course of a few months, since he appeared to call on my helper regularly. After his visits to her I would spot him in our garage with a cardboard box in his hand into which he would be putting spiders to feed his minor bird, and I wondered at the time if this was the main purpose of his visits to my helper. The searching out of food for his pet bird, as I could see no other reason why he should be wasting his time on a woman who, by my standards, had little to offer in the way of intelligent conversation, the sort of conversation that might make his visits worthwhile. As I say, I got to know him little by little in this way, in the garage searching for spiders and other insects, but it was not until he was well into writing A.O. the Third Eye that I visited him and his wife in the one room they occupied. This visit stands out in my memory for more than one reason. In the first case, they were poor, at that time very poor, through no fault of their own. They had changed their name to Randpa by this time. It had been suggested to him that he should write a book about his early life as a lama in Tibet, and after his initial refusal he had realized that perhaps there was no other way to make a living, and so, with reluctance, he had agreed. He felt it necessary to write under a nom de plume, and had legally changed his name from Carl Q. Atman to Tuesday Lobsang Randpa. The book was progressing, and by the time I first visited things were improving a little because he was receiving some advance payments from the publisher, but not enough yet to make it possible to move to a better location. I was quite accustomed to visiting poor people in the country where I was brought up, but city poverty is of a different nature altogether. I am talking about the Bayswater district of London where the Randpa TMS lived in one of those bleak, grey Victorian row houses that had seen better days and now were falling into decay and disrepute, inhabited by perhaps 12 or more people who lived their lives in one room, who may have had a meagre wage from a wretched job, or may have had no job at all and were managing us somehow. Life was a perpetual struggle for them. There was little enjoyment in it. Food was scarce, and what they did manage to scrape together provided minimal nourishment. The one room they slept, cooked, ate, and existed in was heated by a gas fire with a meter which hungrily made short shrift of any spare change they may have saved up in the expectation of an hour or two of heat to comfort their frail bodies and dry their clothing. They shared a bath and lavatory with others, and had to wait their turn and put up with the filth left behind by the first comers. The scum round the bathtub, the dirt and sputum in the wash basin. The lavatory left unflushed. This was the backdrop of the Randpa's TM lives when I first visited. It was new to me and a little shocking. Their own room, however, was different. Even though poorly furnished, it imparted none of the depressing elements described above. It was as though they had risen above their surroundings and carved their own unique existence out of the rough, cold stone, an existence that was welcoming, peaceful and whole. As one entered their room from the gloomy landing on the first floor, the difference was startlingly apparent. First of all, there was the incense. They could not really afford incense at that time, at the time of my first visit, on a regular basis, but that one stick was lit for my coming. Perhaps that is why it made such an unforgettable impression. When I think of Lobsang Ranpo, it is insistently and consistently the same, the incense that comes back, the aroma of it in my nostrils as I remember him. Common sense and logic tells me it is only in my imagination. I am not really smelling the incense. Common sense and logic tells me that would be impossible. Nevertheless, imagination is a real and powerful thing not to be underestimated. And as I seem to smell the incense, so I can see him in my mind, a TMSI picture. Him clearly, his solid body and strong arms, his shaven head and slight beard which hides a disfigured jaw. I see him as he takes the thick, long stick from the round metal container, holds it in his hand as he lights it with a match, contemplates it for a moment, then, gently blowing out the flame, sets it in the small brass holder at his bedside. The smoky gray vapor, rising and swirling, leaves tranquility and peace, raises our vibrations, permeates our beings. On that first day, Rat Mab, his wife, had opened the front door to me and led the way up the dingy staircase to the first floor. I had met her previously but scarcely knew her. She was different from the type of woman I normally associated with, and I failed to place her in my somewhat limited category. I found her reactions were slightly unusual, with an edge hard to analyze. Nevertheless, she was the wife of a man I had come to respect profoundly, and as such I treated her with the same respect, which was perhaps a mistake. I was apprehensive. The place felt unwholesome. It was shabby and smelled of stale food, and to make matters worse, each stair creaked as I stepped on it, causing the sensation of total collapse at a momentous TMS notice. Arriving at the top, she opened one of the three brown doors giving onto the landing and led the way into their room. Dr. Rampo was resting with his feet up on a narrow bed, a small Sialpoint Siamese cat curled up on his lap. He was habitually correct in dress, and whenever I had encountered him previously, he had worn a black suit with a pink or blue shirt and a black bow tie. His shoes were of the unlaced variety, the kind one slips on or gets into with the help of a shoehorn, and I later discovered this was because bending was difficult if not impossible for him. On this day he was at home and informal, and was wearing a dark red comfortable dressing gown in place of his jacket, and house slippers on his grey sock-clad feet. I was invited to take one of the two chairs in the room, the other being occupied by a blue rug folded as a bed, which I guessed belonged to the Siamese cat when not resting on a lap. I remember remarking in my mind that the other chair looked rather more comfortable than the one I was to take, and in the course of time I was to discover that this was a perfectly normal state of affairs. I cannot remember ever being actually uncomfortable throughout the years I was to live with the Randpas, although I was frequently asked to move from the better chair in the room so some Siamese cat could occupy what was regarded as their rightful place. The minor bird was no longer with them, having succumbed to the neglect it suffered before Driver Ampa discovered it. The Sialpoint Siamese was their only pet. I settled myself, removing my gloves as I sat down, and placing them with my handbag on the floor beside me. Rat Mab had the kettle on the gas stove and already it was boiling away quite merrily. Reaching for a large brown teapot from a shelf above the stove, she took a teaspoon from the sink and measured out 3 spoonfuls of tea leaves from a rather battered, octagonal tin perched on the side of the sink, one of those tins decorated in the Eastern manner and customarily given as a gift at Christmas time filled with tea. A tea caddy. She poured the boiling water into the pot, all the while the little cat sleeping soundly and no one making any effort to converse. There was really no need to. Focusing attention on the tea making was calming in itself. It was almost a ritual. I assume they drank a great deal of tea during the course of each day. When food was in short supply, the tea would assuage their hunger for a while. Tea making in Tibet would have been quite different. I knew that from reading the draft of Ao the Third Eye chapter by chapter as it was written. I knew that in Tibet large blocks of tea from India or China were brought through the mountain passes on ponies by traders, and in the lamasaries the blocks would to be broken up by the monks and thrown into a huge cauldron of boiling water. Salt was added, and soda, and when it had all boiled up again, shovelfuls of clarified butter were loaded into the mixture and the whole lot left to boil for hours. As Ratmab made our tea that day, it crossed my mind how different life in Tibet must have been, how hard it must be to fit into our Western culture, and how well Dr. Andpu achieved the business of living in Rome as the Romans do. I knew he was reluctant to write about his childhood and early manhood as a lama in Tibet because even then, at the very start, he knew it would bring fame and adulation, notoriety and disbelief, but at this point, after many attempts to find work, there was no other choice. He had to survive, and survival required an income. Sitting there, it occurred to me that I had never felt so relaxed in new surroundings. This was the second memorable point of the visit, to be sitting quietly in unfamiliar surroundings, visiting for the first time, and feeling completely at home, turning thoughts over in my own mind as the tea was prepared. This was significant. Acute shyness loomed as a black cloud on the horizon of my life. It is true I had successfully overcome the crippling stammer suffered as a child, but that stammer was merely a symptom of the uncertainty that still plagued my life, still left me in a state of internal turmoil and confusion when called upon to perform social duties, cover up and appear in control. In the presence of Dr. Andpa, this lama from Tibet, it was quite different. There was something about him that annulled the fears and the anxiety. It all simply melted away like morning mist before the rising sun. To be within his radius imparted a magical feeling. One was drawn into an all-enveloping aura of security and warmth, and experienced the kind of contentment that comes from finding oneself adjusted, aligned, in tune. I suppose, in fact, that is exactly what it was. I use the word AE magicala because it was an unknown quantity. What was happening was not yet understood by science, and it would be some time before it was. Before relating the third unforgettable incident that day, let me tell you how I come to be conjuring up these memories at all. It happened like this. A reader who has since become a good friend and who liked my book telling of the years I spent at Dr. Ampapam Grace's side, wrote not too long ago asking if I could write about the latter at EMS kindness and generosity. In the letter my reader said, "Ao, we appreciate that Dr. Ampa helped numerous people during his travels, and whilst we don't at EMT wish to delve into his private affairs, our curiosity gets the better of us, as reading about these events would give us much pleasure. Knowing the joy your first book gave us, would you ever write a second highlighting such generosity? Our delightful and persuasive way of putting it, and while strongly tempted, yet I still felt unable to undertake such a task. I have never kept notes or a diary, how could I ever remember all the kindnesses, all the generosity, all the graciousness of Drive Rampa TMS life? I felt it would be impossible, and even if I was able to remember, it was improbable that I would be able to write it in a readable, interesting way. Generosity and kindness was an everyday state of affairs with him, it was his way of life. Putting it into words would not be easy, it just was. Over several months, however, I thought about the idea and decided that perhaps he was right after all, this caring reader. Perhaps it would give pleasure to others if I were, even in a small way, to attempt to sketch the grace of the world of Randpa, even if a trace of it were to filter through in the stories I am going to tell you, even a tiny trace, it would be enough. And so I shall try. The tea was made and left to brew for a few minutes. We continued in companionable silence. The room was simple, two narrow beds separated by a screen, two chairs, and what must have been a card table beside Dr. Ampa TMS bed, covered with a cloth and holding a small, rather old radio, a clock, the brass incense holder and a torch. There was a simple chest of drawers, and on the floor sat a manual typewriter and a stack of paper. In a corner there was another small rickety table holding an object covered by a black cloth. I later learned that this was a crystal of great purity which he used for scrying, or crystal gazing. It was, as I say, a simple room, a poor room but not poverty-stricken. There was a well-rounded feeling here. Even if life on a material level was out of kilter for the Rampatia mess through lack of money, on the higher level on which they seemingly lived, all was well with the world. Rat Mab handed me my tea. It was already with milk and sugar was not offered. This was how tea was served and drunk in their house. I remember finding that rather intriguing. At home we poured the tea and handed milk, lemon and sugar separately, allowing the guest the choice. But here there was only one way. There was no effort to impress, no difference because a guest was present. This was how it was, take it or leave it. I rather liked that. I took tea with lemon at home, but I enjoyed this tea, it was different. We began to discuss the book he was writing, the book he had entitled Ao the Third Eye. As he was explaining something to me in his quiet, rather slow, carefully enunciated voice, my mind all of a sudden was distracted by a sound, just a faint, almost imperceptible sound, like someone crying or whimpering. Then almost at once it was stifled as though a hand or handkerchief was placed over the mouth. We continued our discussion. In a few moments the sound came again, louder this time. There was no mistaking it, it was someone crying, sobbing, and it was coming from outside the room. I looked at Dr. Anpa but he appeared oblivious. I looked at Rat Mab and she seemed annoyed, impatient. Aoetmll have to do something about her, Chen. A she said, Aoetms at the door again, crying. A. Ao is she? Do you mind telling her Aoetmll look in on her soon, Rat Mab. A I knew he was almost completely deaf, and he clearly had not heard the sound because his mind was centered on our conversation and on my reactions. He did not know me well at that time and it was necessary for him to concentrate deeply in order to follow my conversation due to his lack of hearing. As he became accustomed to a person it was easier for him, he familiarized himself with the patterns of that individual at TMS mind and thus less concentration was required. He was clairvoyant to a very unusual degree, but to deal with more than one stranger at a time was an enormous strain for him. He relied on his powers of thought reading and lip reading when conversing, but one has to remember that we often are thinking something entirely different from that which we are actually saying, which complicates matters somewhat from the point of view of a clairvoyant. He continued his discussion as though nothing untoward had happened, while Rat Mab went to the door, opening it just sufficiently to allow her to leave the room, and closing it behind her. I confess to a sense of excitement, there was the possibility of some dreadful scene unfolding outside the closed door. It was unlike anything that could ever have occurred at home. In my well-ordered, well-bred world, drama of this kind simply did not happen. People did not go around sobbing outside other people as at TM doors, they suffered in silence, even though perhaps quite as acutely. I held my breath in expectation. Rat Mab returned to the room, seated herself on the end of the bed and took up her tea saying nothing. I relaxed and took up my teacup as she had done. Maybe this kind of thing was an everyday occurrence here, maybe people were being murdered, fainting, crying at doors, and who knows what else besides in broad daylight here. My imagination was in full swing, and it was with some difficulty that I returned my mind to Dr. Amper and our discussion. Soon it was time for me to leave. My dog was unwell at home, I was anxious to get back to him. I asked Dr. Amper not to rise, and took his hand to bid him farewell. Ao, goodbye, it was so nice to see you, Chen. He had invited my husband and me to use the name he was known by to close friends a few weeks previously, but it still did not flow easily. After a firm, warm handshake, he mentioned that there was a hitch with the book at the publishing house, someone was casting doubts on its authenticity. He made light of it, but one could tell it was troublesome. I left with Ratmab, promising to come again soon. On the landing I glanced at the other two brown doors, but they remained firmly closed, guarding whatever dark secrets their interiors might possess. It was not easy to see the staircase in the gloom, and as I looked down I saw a trail of what could only be blood, still bright, a shiny dark red, not yet dry, leading from the door on the far side of the landing to the one we had just left. I grabbed Ratnaba TMS arm, pointing, "Ao, look, dash blood." She shrugged. "Ao, yes, EATMLL have to clean this up before the landlady sees it." She TMS a horror. "Ao, but, well, what can have happened? Someone must be hurt. It's horrid, Ratmab." "Ao, it's just that girl, the man she works for, they fight. Then she gets pregnant and, well, it's a long story. If the landlady knew her half of it, she TMD put her out. The girl has nowhere to go. We do what can for her. It RTMS not her fault and she TMS all alone in the world." A we reached the hallway and Ratmab unlocked the front door. "Aoe ATMLL, come with you to the corner, I have to make some phone calls," she said. It was no distance to the corner. I had been uneasy on my way here, it was new territory, life in the raw, the other side of their tracks. I had felt overdressed, ill at ease, and now with Ratmab by my side it was little better, but at least curiosity overcame my self-consciousness. "Ao, what can you do to help the girl, Ratmab, and why do you try?" "There are places for people like that, she TMLL only pull you down. Surely Chen has to get on with his book, not be bothered by such undesirables as her." Even as I spoke I could feel her disapproval. She turned and looked at me evenly, almost with hostility. "Ao, Whitmer inexperienced, you don't yet TMT have any idea about real life. Not everyone is born with a silver spoon in their mouth as you were. Now I must leave you." She stepped into the phone box as she spoke, busily pulling out the directory, and started to find the number she wanted, jingling the coins in her pocket. It was a curt dismissal. I turned away, somewhat chastened, but determined to talk to Chen about it next time I saw him, and as it happened I did not have long to wait. A week or two later I was coming out of Fuller at EMST shop with a cake box in my hand when I ran into him walking down Queensway from Bayswater Road. We greeted each other and stood for a few minutes chatting, then I remembered that I really wanted to ask him about his part in associating with these women, women whom I saw as undesirables and worthless. In truth it was none of my business, but I felt compelled to broach the subject. There was the woman who lived on the same floor as he did, and then there was my ex-helper whom he had so regularly visited. "Ao, why don't you TMT you come home with me for a cup of tea?" I asked. "Ao have a friend coming up from the country this evening for a few days and she adores Fuller at EMS cakes. EATMM sure she wouldn't TMT mind us sampling this one." A we set off down Queensway together, turning left at Moscow Road and left again into Street Petersburg Place, where we lived. Both my children were attending school so we were able to sit undisturbed in their drawing room with our tea. Knowing it was difficult for him to sit in an upholstered chair or a sofa for any length of time, I pulled up a hardback chair which appeared to suit him reasonably well. The subject of my ex-helper came up easily enough. I had had to dismiss her and had been a little concerned that he may see it as harsh on my part, particularly as he, according to her, "Ao was a gentleman who helped me more than anyone ever before. Ao, you know, Chen, I have been wondering what Mrs. W. meant when she told me repeatedly how much you helped her. What did you do for her? And, even more puzzling to me, why did you help her?" "Ao," I paused, wondering if I was going a bit too far. But he seemed calm and somehow waiting for me to go on, so I continued, "Ao, personally, I found her useless and dash well, later TMS be blunt, an out and out liar into the bargain. The stories she invented were astonishing. It was comic in one way that she expected me to believe her, and at first I did, which must have given her free rein to get going on a really big scale. The important people she professed to know, Why, she had a catalogue of all the aristocrats in Yorkshire, the places she had been, the things, well, none of it matters, but yet I am curious, I must confess, as to why you wasted time on her. He said nothing for a moment but sat silently, almost making me doubt my position. But how could I doubt it? I knew the woman was insane. Ayo, you have to realize that I see differently from you people. Ayo people, ATM was a favorite expression of his, one he used frequently, leading one to the assumption that he knew himself to be an outsider. I was well aware by this time that he was clairvoyant, that he could see auras, read thoughts, he could look into the past and the future with accuracy. Although I knew virtually nothing about psychic matters then, I realized that life must be very different for him than for the average person. I passed him a cup of tea with milk, just as he drank it at home. He took a sip, and went on. Ayo can see a person as they really are, not just as they seem to be superficially. Let us say that I can see the soul of a person. Life is a stage, you know, as Shakespeare tells you, and people are as actors living first one life and then another. In one life they could be a beggar, in the next they could be a prince or a princess. Yes, we even change sexes to fulfill what we have to learn in each life. But I can see beyond the actor in each person, I can see their real value, or lack of it. He paused to allow me to digest what he was saying. Although so advanced himself, he realized how little I knew, how this was all strange to me and was not immediately understandable or acceptable. Ayo, do you think then that Mrs. W. was worthy of your time? I find this hard to believe. I was appalled to even think of her as being worthy. She was an uneducated working class woman, and not even an honest one at that. Ayo, do you not think she had any worth? He asked quietly. Ayo, well, the value you place on a person is based on how they present themselves. In other words, what school they have attended, what their social standing is and that of their family, if they speak in a cultured way, the clothes they wear, their mannerisms, and so on. It was said without criticism, he was merely stating a fact, and if it was offensive that was not his intention. Ayo, on the other hand, he went on, do not have the advantage of knowing precisely how they should appear in order to pass your test of worthiness. I see what they have achieved in a spiritual sense through their lives on earth, I see what they have set themselves to learn in this life. Most times life is too hard, people set themselves impossible lessons and tasks, they take on too much without taking into consideration the setbacks they are going to encounter on earth. I was nonplussed. I had to accept the truth of what he was saying regarding my standards, but at the same time I felt it necessary to defend them. Our whole system depended on those standards. Judicially, however, I said nothing. He smiled. AOC, I have upset you, but I am only trying to explain to you why I tried to steer your ex-helper onto a path she could handle. Does it sound like interference? It wasn't TMT. She is sufficiently evolved to recognize that I was different, that I could help her, so she sought my assistance. One cannot turn aside when one is asked to help and when there is hope. It's a burden to be psychic, you know, it's a responsibility that has to be shouldered. And there was hope, a slim hope, but still hope, so I tried. She failed several times, and I tried again, but finally, it was enough. There was no point then in going on with her because she wasn't TMT making a sincere effort. If a person seeks help and then rejects it, or fails, it isn't TMT a good thing. Not a good thing for them. It's like slipping back on the ladder of evolution. If you seek help you have to be serious, you have to intend to follow the path, and you have to make a sincere effort to AOC. And what about the other woman, the one next door to you? Is she the same sort? Ayo, no, not really. She's a victim. She never had a chance and took more or less the only road offered to such women as being a way to make a living. She got in with an unscrupulous man who uses her. It's the old story. Sex, emotional blackmail, hopelessness. Rat Mab and I do what we can for her just because one has to let her see that there are better things in life.